This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The date is January 4th, 2017, and due to popular demand, we have decided to extend our podcasting relationship here. This is Psychology is Dead, Lucha Undead Edition.
Ooh.
And me and Quentin Moody are going to do our bottom 50 wrestlers.
I didn't agree to any of this.
We promised to make this podcast at least 9.5 hours long because all of you disgusting monsters out there like to listen to us talk for days. I'm just kidding. This show is for fun. We don't talk about serious stuff here. This is a fun show. Hello and welcome again, Lucha Lushes. You are here on Lucha Undead. Get to know the PTBN, PWO, Wrestling with Words. Oh, just kidding. He's also part of the Pro Wrestling Only. Quentin Moody, how are you doing tonight, Quentin?
It's 1:12 a.m. in the correct time zone, and I'm doing a podcast, and I think I'm probably a mentally sick person because no one should be doing podcasts this late.
It's 1:12. I think you're an hour behind, sir, because in the correct time zone, it's already 1 a.m.
In the real America.
That's it. Where Donald Trump, our president-elect, lives, it's actually already 1 a.m. So I've got Adrian with me as my co-host, as always.
Hello.
And I've got a special guest tonight, Quentin, a guy who you've heard me talk to a lot. The first guy who's not technically a two-time guest but has been on the podcast twice is Quentin. You were a host before. How did that happen? How did you fill in as a co-host? What was that all about, as these fans have heard you before?
I think Adrian was busy, and you DM'd me like, hey, you just got on the PWO feed. Might as well help me co-host this show. And I'm like, I'm not sure that is how that works, but you know, I guess you needed me to fill in, and that was how that worked. And
it's
fun.
Pretty easy. You just sit here and listen and kind of let all the wrestling stuff go over your head. That's how it works. That's what I do.
See, I could have done that, but then Parv was on the show and we wound up talking about Junkyard Dog and Big Daddy. And like, I don't even know how we got there.
Parv was upset about that, too. He thought that we were going to talk about, like, Shakespeare and stuff. And so he was like, I felt like we talked too much about wrestling. And that's not what it was. And people don't. I was tired and low energy. And I'm like, Parv, you're always tired and low energy. You were fine. But I brought you in to cover the music stuff for me because I'm not a music guy. But you know what I thought about today as I was listening to a podcast about other music, dead music people, was Scott Criscolo. I think we need to get Quentin Moody. QT underscore Moody, Quentin Skinner. I've seen other places. You got a lot of nicknames here, buddy. And Scott Criscolo from the Place to Be Nation on a podcast together talking about music and leave the politics out of it so that you guys can kind of chop it up. Because I feel like you guys are both, out of everybody on the PTBN kind of side of things, you're the most hardcore music people. That do wrestling podcasts. Do you think that's fair to say about you, Quentin? Are you a pretty hardcore music fan?
Yeah. Besides talking about wrestling an obscene amount of times a day, I listen to music or writing about music or writing my own music or like doing stuff like that. So like music has been a thing that I've been really involved with since I was, I think, like 7 or 8 years old.
Do you think you were like really not just like passively it existed, but like really, I guess, how do I put it, engaged in music as a fandom or even as a performer before you were engaged in wrestling in the same way?
Well, yeah, because when I was younger, well, my dad used to rap, and my dad was actually pretty successful, and he met people like Rick Rubin and 50 Cent, Biggie Smalls, Mobb Deep, like people like that. So he had a lot of clout, and I just kind of gravitated to rap. And when I was young, I started writing my own raps. He started teaching me how to produce and things like that. So before I started thinking about wrestling critically, I was thinking about music and how I could become a good musician, like really young.
Okay, well, you mentioned Rick Rubin there, and I assume it's not Hal, but I mean, Rick Rubin was involved in wrestling pretty closely. I mean, he famously was like one of the money backers from Smoky Mountain Wrestling, or he was a producer and he was involved with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Is Rick Rubin the one who kind of showed you wrestling, seeing as you met him when you were just a young kid, or where did you kind of get exposed to wrestling then in the mix of all this?
Oh, my wrestling thing is I'm just like a normal person that's been exposed to wrestling when they were a kid. My dad had it on one night, and I just kind of sat next to him and watched it. So, like, my earliest memories are of, like, a 2002 Raw or something. One of the first pay-per-view matches I remember ever watching is Chris Jericho versus Triple H from, like, Fully Loaded 2000. So, it's a thing where I just found it as a kid, and it kind of stuck with me, but it didn't become, like, a real love until I started thinking about it critically maybe like 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. Well, it's been stuck in the back of my head for the past, I don't know, we've probably been recording for like 5-7 minutes. So probably, or 8 minutes here. I'll wait a couple seconds. It'll be 8 minutes exactly for anyone who's keeping time. 8 minutes I've been recording. But for the past 5 minutes, I've been thinking about the fact that I skipped over the first opening question that I'm supposed to ask. So I'm just going to do it before we keep going a little bit too far, which is, Quentin, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
Yeah, I'm a member of the PWO board. Yeah. I mean, I don't post as much as some people do, but I've had an account for a little over a year now. Well, I started my account in 2015. Yeah.
Okay. So this show started out, and the idea was I wanted to dig up some dirt when it comes to message board culture, wrestling message board culture, because I think a lot of the history of message boards is dying and disappearing, unfortunately. As weird as it is, because I think we all kind of figured that because it's digital technology, the information will always be there, it'll never disappear, but it does, and we're kind of coming to find out that now, even with the PWO 2K project that they're working on, stuff that came out even as early as, you know, the early 2000s, when we kind of assumed everything was being digitally saved and would never disappear, it's still kind of hard to find, and it's just based on that. So that was kind of the initial idea of what this podcast would be, but that's completely gone. And as you are, you know, a host of a podcast on PWO, and you've been talked about, I had you on as the fill-in guest host when Adrian was busy and I was recording with Parv, and it just wasn't going to work out to have him on. I had you on to fill in because I wanted to kind of expose people who listen to podcasts on the network to, hey, here's this new personality. He's involved, and it kind of feels like this is meant to now be an extended version of that, but you're also someone who I consider a friend at this point. I mean, I'm pretty sure me and you are friends, Quentin. We don't just work, you know, with stuff here on PWO, PTBN, but we also work over at Wrestling With Words with each other. We're kind of constantly chatting back and forth about wrestling. Even before we started here, we're talking about Wrestle Kingdom and important stuff there. And as we're talking, you brought up, you know, your dad being a musician and your dad being the first person you remember watching wrestling with. And it's honestly the first times I've ever heard you bring up your dad. So I just want to ask, like, what's your relationship like with your dad right now? Like, are you guys still close?
Yeah, he's like my best friend.
Okay.
Like my dad, he's the one that taught me, well, exposed me to a lot of stuff. So I'm always indebted to him there. There was a time where I didn't talk to him, maybe a few months ago, because of some stuff where he said he moved to South Carolina, but he lied about where he moved. He was like in Florida. Then he was actually in Texas, and he didn't tell any of his family until like my mother found out on Facebook. And so I was upset with him for a few weeks there. But besides that, like, he's like been my best friend for a while.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I'm really jealous of that, honestly, because my relationship with my father is not great, and I'll just put that out there. And, you know, the thing is that I think he tries to pretend like he really cares, but if he did care, he could listen to this and hear me say that. Yeah. And I know that he never will. But what I find that's very interesting is that, like I said, that's the first time I've heard you talk about him. I've heard you bring up, you know, your uncle giving you ECW tapes. I've heard you talk about your sisters, even your mom here and there. But I was taken aback, and I just thought for a second. I'm like, oh, geez, I've never heard him even talk about his dad before until we just kind of bring it up. So you kind of, you look up to him, one of your closest friends, but you guys have hit a rough patch recently. And then now I kind of have to get down the conversation. I mean, what do you think started the whole rough patch situation and the fact that he moved away without kind of telling everybody what's going on? I mean, is there recently issues between him and your mom, or has that always been that way and he's just now being more distant? Like, what do you think?
Oh, he's not distant. Like, he still, like, communicates with us. And he was still communicating with us even when he was, like, not being truthful about where he was living-wise. So the thing was that my mother and my dad got divorced in 2014, which is my senior year of high school. And in 2015, he moved. He said he was moving to South Carolina to be closer to family because he couldn't afford to live in Maryland, because Maryland's one of the hardest places to live financially. So he said he was moving to South Carolina to be with family. He was actually in Florida, and when I talked to him, he said it wasn't because, like, he was trying to get away from people. It's because that he was on his own. He had, like, you know, he couldn't work. He had broke his back when I was a kid, maybe, like, 8 years old. So he couldn't work for, like, the rest of my childhood. He had a broken back, so he couldn't do anything. So he had no way to support himself once he got divorced from my mother. So he moved to Florida as sort of a last resort because he couldn't afford to live anywhere else. And he didn't tell us because he's a very prideful guy. So he doesn't want us to think he's weak or that we should worry about dad and that we should think dad always has things covered, because he doesn't want his children to have to worry about him that way. But once he, you know, opened up that way, I understood where he was coming from, because, you know, I'm not sure I'd want to open up about not being able to support myself either.
No, and I mean, I totally get that. It's tough to admit things in general. I mean, God, it's really tough. I mean, especially when it comes to financial things, it starts to turn into being really, like, feeling really shameful and just hard to talk about. But I guess that's not the point of this show, right? Adrian, am I wrong? That's not the point of this show.
I think it just became the point.
Yeah, I mean, it became the point of this show, and we get into that. I mean, because Quentin, I mean, you're a younger guy, but you come across really mature for your age.
How old are you, Quentin?
I'm 19 years old. I'll be turning 20 in April.
Wow. No, yeah, Tim's so right. I thought you were, like, at least 25 or 26 or something. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But do you feel – okay, so you graduate high school, or you're leaving high school. And, I mean, I was a grown man when I was in high school. I was probably born an old man, honestly. But I was a grown man when I was, you know, in high school as well. But do you feel like it kind of all came together when your dad left, or were you always on this track? Like, do you feel like me where you say, like, I remember being an adult when I was a kid, or do you think that you kind of ramped up needing to be responsible when your father left or when you graduated high school?
I mean, yeah, definitely ramped up, because I was the oldest male in the house, and with two little sisters that are 11 years younger than me, I have to be more, you know, responsible. But I was always viewed as someone that, I guess, was more responsible and more mature for their age. I didn't do a lot of the things that the people around me did. I grew up in areas where people were obsessed with getting into gangs or having the most expensive clothes or selling drugs, and I just didn't ever have the desire to do any of that. So I think that even that early on, I was a little bit on track to be the person that I am now.
Do you feel like you were robbed of the being irresponsible part of life? Like, do you feel like you're going to at some point want to go back and do that? Cause, I mean, it's a weird question to ask, but like people do that where they kind of like, oh, now I'm in my 30s and my younger sisters are in their 20s and they're in college and my mom is, you know, dating Stu and Stu seems cool. So now I can go do ecstasy and party and stuff. Like, cause I know that me, when I was your age, I was definitely probably just as mature as you, if not like in a weird way, more mature. Cause I was, you know, supporting myself 100%, taking, you know, working two different jobs, this, that, and the other. And, you know, this podcast isn't about me, obviously, but do you feel like you kind of sowed your wild oats, or do you think that that's ahead of you? Like, how do you look at that part of life?
I mean, I've done the drugs, like, but not the partying. Like, I was never a party person, so I've never really had the desire to do that. Like, I hang with my friends all the time, but I'm not getting into stupid shit. So it's, you know, I'm not like reaching that kind of overboard level. But as far as like drugs, like I used to be really in the taking psychedelics in high school. So I guess like now that I'm older and in college, I'm not doing it as much, I'd say.
Okay. Well, we just need to make sure that we plan. Obviously 2017 might not happen for either of us, but SCI 2018, 2019, we get Matt Riddle out there and we can all do some mushrooms together, or maybe some ayahuasca. Maybe we can get Matt Seidel there as well, and we can do a double Matt with Quentin and Tim ayahuasca journey. So, okay, so you feel, so you definitely still feel like you experienced enough of that part of things, and you don't, like, do you not have that feeling like that you're just waiting for a chance to cut loose? I mean, it's tough, especially for you, because I assume you're still living at home with your younger, you know, sisters, as you said, who unfortunately are probably starting to feel somewhat like daughters to you at this point, like as weird as that is, and your mom and everything. Like, do you have a feeling of, oh, once this is done, once that is done, I'm going to be able to cut loose? Or do you feel as like, again, like that you've already done that, and now it's just time to kind of be a serious adult who's going to support himself going forward?
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, like, I've done, like I said, I'm not like a perfect person. Like, when I said that I wasn't like in gangs or buying ridiculous amounts of expensive clothes or selling drugs like the people around me were, you know, I didn't do that, but it doesn't mean that I didn't have my fair share of fuck ups, like stealing and doing drugs that I shouldn't have, and like stealing liquor from liquor stores. So I've done like a good amount of things that I regret, but I never have a desire to go back and do other things. Like, I have no desire to touch alcohol ever. Like, there's just nothing I ever want to do. I don't ever have a desire to go to a bar and stay out till 5 a.m. That's just not appealing to me. So even when I do have the chance to venture out on my own, cutting loose in that way just doesn't sound like the kind of life that I want to live, because I don't know if you noticed, I'm just not like the kind of person that I think I am. Well, I'm not sure how I come across to you.
No, you don't. You don't come across like that at all. But I mean, going out and having a few drinks and all that, like, isn't necessarily all that life is cracked up to be. When you talk about cutting loose, I mean, part of cutting loose is also like going out to an Earth, Wind, and Fire concert and dancing with a 30 to 40 year old church lady named Brenda. I mean, that's the kind of cutting loose I could do. Am I right? Like, so we've been going for the requisite amount of time before the first break, but I feel like I would be remiss if we didn't cut off this kind of young boy growing up, coming of age thing with Quentin without talking about your kind of tattoo choices. Because, I mean, you've got a nice big, like, Egyptian-themed sleeve going on one side. I don't know if it's your right or left arm. And then you also just recently got a new tattoo that says, was it Stay Alive in red ink?
It's on the same arm. It's on the right arm.
It's on the same arm. Is that the two tattoos you have? Do you have anything else?
Yeah, those are only two tattoos I have, but I got them all pretty big.
Yeah, you kind of went for it. For me, I kind of, my tattoos were cheap and free, or not cheap and free, but quick and free. They were like simple, easy to do stuff that my friends did. But like, what What did it mean for you, and what was it about that made you kind of go for these, you kind of really went for it with your first two tattoos, and when did you get the first one, and kind of what was the idea behind it, and obviously you just got the second one recently, but also what was the idea behind that?
Well, the reason for like going all out with the tattoos is that, you know, I'm not, you know, whenever I see people with tattoos that look like really, I guess not tacky, but you ever seen, like, I've known like too many people that have like really bad jail tattoos. A lot of my friends will have like a scribbled on tattoo of their mother's name on their chest or something, and it looks bad. So I just didn't want to go to a tattoo place that I didn't feel like gave me my money's worth. So that's why, like, I went to the places I went to. The first one I got on my 17th birthday.
Okay.
Well, the idea behind that is that I've always been really intrigued by Egyptian imagery, and the three things that I have tattooed on me. I have camels that represent traveling and seeing the world. I have pyramids that represent, you know, leaving a legacy. And then, like, the Sphinx on me represents royalty. The second
I thought you were going to say the Sphinx just represents being a total weirdo.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know why you'd want, like, a big monument of your face just, you know. But
on a lion body?
Yeah, it's just really weird. But the second one, like you mentioned, it says stay alive. And then you didn't mention the part outside of the box that says there's a 22 there. I got stay alive because I guess where I live and the kind of person I am, that stay alive represents getting out of Baltimore alive and, you know, staying alive as in not doing destructive things to myself. And then the 22 is the jersey number of a friend of mine who passed away in 2014.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I saw the 22, honestly, is why I didn't
see that. Fine.
But, I mean, obviously that's really impassioned, but you talked about getting out of Baltimore. What is, I mean, do you mean getting out of your kind of preteens Baltimore alive, or do you mean getting out of Baltimore altogether, like leaving the city?
Leaving the city. They're like, there's nothing good here.
Okay, and I mean, what does that mean for you? I mean, you're kind of, most of your family is there. What's the goal when it comes to getting out of Baltimore for Quentin?
You know, living someplace where I feel like, you know, not that I fit in, but that where I feel comfortable. I don't really feel comfortable in Baltimore the way a lot of the people around me think and view life. That's just not a place where I feel like I can grow as a person. So that's what getting out of Baltimore means to me. And okay, staying alive is like, you know, kind of hopeful that I don't spend the rest of my life here.
Okay. I mean, based on just how much of a weirdo you are, LA is probably not for you.
I was thinking more lines with like Seattle or something.
I was going to say, I've heard Portland is good for weirdos, and Austin is also supposed to be good for weirdos. So keep those two cities in mind for you. Otherwise, there's not a lot of places for Quentin. But Quentin, we'll take a quick break. And like I said, I feel like this kind of caps off of, you know, the growing up quick, the becoming a man by 19 story. And then from there, maybe we could talk about something fun when we come back.
Maybe.
And I'm sorry, this is 100% my fault, but we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Placement Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlacementNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Placement Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Placement Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, so we're back, and you just heard some great plugs from some great podcasts over on the Place to Be Nation podcast feed, where you can hear really anything ranging the gambit of wrestling coverage to to other wrestling coverage. That's what Place to Be is all about, the PTBN PWO network. We've got middle-aged East Coast guys talking about WWF, and we've got other middle-aged UK guys talking about WWF. That's what this network is all of. No, I'm just kidding. Fuck, that was bad, right? So, Quentin, we talked a little bit about your wrestling fandom as it started, but let's like really get into it. So you see it when you're like 10 years old. Do you assume, based on the time frame and kind of the situation, what do you think was like the era and what you were first watching?
The first match I remember is like Jericho versus Triple H from like Fully Loaded 2000.
Okay.
So, you know, 17 years ago. So
actually, like, let me check the dates. All right, let me look at it. It is exactly 17 years ago today, actually. That's
no
not true.
Way.
That's not true. Come on, no, that's definitely
way.
Not true. No, okay, so Fully Loaded, Jericho versus Triple H from, it was 2002?
No, 2000.
Oh, 2000, okay. And so that was on. And I mean, that would have been like the main event of the show. How did you just see that match?
We had like one of the black boxes. And
okay.
Yeah, so it just was a thing that was on, and my father was watching it, and I just came downstairs, and you know, that was it, really. Like, you know, it wasn't like a immediate I'm in love with wrestling thing, but it's a thing where I saw it, and then after that I was like, oh, okay, what time does this come on? And I guess I just like watched it after that.
So you were like, that super muscled up guy sure throws a nice high knee. But that short guy with the beard and blonde hair, he seems slightly overrated. Is that was that kind of your instant reaction?
No. No, it was just like I thought, like it was like a whole bunch of, I'm not gonna say what, you know, what 3-year-old me thinks, but you know, I assumed that it was just like a whole bunch of chaotic stuff going on. You know, even as I've gone back and rewatched that match, it's pretty damn great with a whole bunch of stuff going on. So, you know, me seeing so much stuff on the screen at one time probably appealed, you know, fairly well.
Right, lots of bright flashing colors. But you're also a shoot guy, right? Like you're into MMA and
yeah.
I heard you and Skill Crane, former guest of the show, Josh? Is that his real name?
Yeah, Josh.
Josh, he was on the show. He was really good. It was really difficult for me to call him Josh. He was on, and he's a big MMA fan, and you guys host a podcast together called Tap or Snap. And I was just listening to the most recent, possibly last episode, or at least last episode for a while, and you two were burying submission grappling, or at least he was. I'm trying to suss out where you're at on this. submission grappling is great, and I don't know why you guys are burying it. So, like, as a shoot fan, but also as a fan who got into the pro wrest at 3 years old, watching Jericho and Triple H, like, was that the catalyst? Did you watch wrestling from then on and you were like, okay, now that there's wrestling in high school, I'm going to do it, even though it's not quite the same thing? Or, like, is that kind of where the tie-in is? Or what got you into wanting to do amateur wrestling, and what got you into being a fan of MMA?
Well, like, the MMA story is kind of similar to the wrestling one, which is, like, it wasn't like my dad showed me at this time. It was just randomly because we got Spike TV, and Spike TV was a big thing, and it had Impact, and I used to watch Impact on Spike. So it would have been around, like, 2005 or something, and I just saw The Ultimate Fighter. And it was, you know, since it was around 2005, I think that was the year Rashad Evans won Ultimate Fighter, and that was like season two, maybe. So I got into it that way. And when I got into amateur wrestling, you know, I already know it's not the same thing as professional wrestling, but I just kind of like the competitiveness that you get from a one-on-one sport like wrestling. It's a thing where, yeah, you have coaches and people who train you, but when you get out there on the mat, you only have yourself to rely on. So I just really like the competitive nature of it, where you have to figure out a way to win. You need to figure it out. You don't have anyone else out there to do it for you.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of why I enjoyed amateur wrestling. And, I mean, most combat sports in general, but I guess I am. I guess it's nice to hear that kind of mirrored. But were you a fan of both MMA and wrestling before you started amateur wrestling?
Yeah, like, so I got in the both of them fairly young. So if I got into wrestling when I was like 3 or 4 years old, I got into MMA when I was like eight years old.
Okay. And did you ever think of it as like, this is the real version of this? Is that kind of what you saw MMA as, or did you separate it as two different things, do you think, even at that young age?
Yeah, because my parents ever led me along to think that wrestling was real. So I always had that separation of wrestling is entertainment, drama. It's, you know, a whole bunch of shit going on there, where I know that this is a sport, where even though Ultimate Fighter has some planted things and stories that they want to tell sometimes, when they're fighting, you know, it's real. And I could separate that pretty young. But that also depends on, I guess, how your parents present that to you. Because if they lead you along with thinking that wrestling is real, then you may, you know, get disappointed when you watch mixed martial arts or something.
Right. What, I mean, did you play any other sports throughout kind of school? And I guess it's tough to say after school, because you're just kind of barely in college now. Did you play any sports in high school, and are you playing any sports now in college?
I mean, I played a lot of sports. I did track, basketball, lacrosse, football. I did a lot of stuff. I was like, the typical jock, athlete kid who was always busy doing something. Basketball was the first sport I played, but football was the one that probably took me the furthest, where coming out of high school, I had scholarship offers from Division 1A schools and Division 2 schools for football.
Okay. And, I mean, so what are you doing now? I mean, I'm not being judgmental, but are you playing any sports now?
I mean, no, I gave up football, and I don't want to make this, you know, sad again. But, you know, this goes back to the 22 I have in my wrist. My senior year, you know, a friend of mine passed away playing football, and that kind of took the desire to play football out of me. So even though I had those opportunities to go play football on scholarship at colleges, I just didn't have it in my heart to like go continue it for another 4 years.
Yeah, no, I can't blame you. I mean, that feels like that's a big part. And again, it sucks to go back to it, but that feels like a big part of your, not just your life right now, but probably what's going to be a big part of your life going forward. I mean, do you want to put your friend's story out there? I mean, I know that it's your friend. It's not necessarily your story to put out, but, you know, how do you feel about putting it out there, at least in this way, so that maybe in some weird way you could feel like it's, you know, out there forever? Not necessarily say that it's not already, but I mean, what happened? Like, your friend here, what was his name? What was the story? How close were you guys? Everything. Like,
so
if you don't feel comfortable, that's fine also.
I'm not going to like give his name away or anything. I'll just like pretty much say like the circumstances. He's out of high school at this point, and he was playing football at the local community college football field with some friends who had recently graduated too. And they're playing with no pads on, and there was like a nasty like head-on collision, and he was in a coma, and I believe he passed either a week after the initial incident or 2 weeks after.
Okay. And it was just from essentially blunt force trauma to the head?
Yeah, like, yeah, so, like, immediately after that, he was, you know, in a coma, and then after a week or two, the family pulled the plug.
And would you say that you were very close?
It wasn't the fact that we were, like, super close, because I transferred to that school, like, my junior year, so I didn't, you know, get to grow with that class like everyone else did. It's the fact that he was, like, the first person to welcome me to that school when pretty much no one else was talking to me or talk, like on the football team, no one else would talk. Right. So I'm, you know, lifting weights by myself, doing my training by myself. And he was like the only person to try to encourage me and try to do things with me. And he was just like a really, friendly person, like the most driven and determined person I ever met. So like, even if I don't have a really long history with him, he showed me kindness that really no one else ever did at that school.
And that's honestly really important. And I think that's something that a lot of people can take away even outside of this. Like, me and you both kind of are sports-y people, or at least we were. I'm not necessarily as much anymore. And obviously you're kind of where you're at now. But like, there's a stereotypical jock person, but even the people playing sports can feel like emotionally and like just, I guess, physically fragile at times. And just being nice and saying hi and inviting someone to the group can be a big fucking deal. And like, even if you guys weren't necessarily the closest friends, that's something that sticks with you. To like pivot to more now, let's say, because you are young on the scene as a wrestling talk abouter, wrestling pundit, a wrestling journalist.
I'm a journalist now.
Kind of. You kind of a wrestling pundit, honestly.
I don't think I am at all.
Not necessarily a, but you know, it's not, you know, journalist is a whole different thing, but you're definitely a wrestling pundit. And if you don't consider yourself as such, that's fine. But who do you think was like, would you liken anybody to similarly a person who was friendly, who brought you along to this whole thing? I mean, you're just kind of starting out with wrestling with words. Were you a part of the Phoenix Plex review, or did you come in only for wrestling with words this past year?
I came in to wrestling with words in February. So like, okay. I wasn't part of Phoenix Plex. I knew Lawrence and I knew like one other person, but I wasn't really familiar with Phoenix Plex besides reading their stuff. Like, I knew them. I knew their work on the side. I didn't really know them as people. So until last year when I joined Wrestling With Words, that's when, you know, I started talking to all those people.
Okay. And so where were you at? I mean, you know, a few years back, I was just some guy listening to podcasts too, and especially listening to, you know, PWO podcasts, and eventually kind of got to know people and now we're doing the whole thing. But like, where were you? Was it very similar? Were you just kind of sitting at home listening to podcasts and you're like, hey, I'm watching these matches too, and these guys are talking about them? And then like, how did it kind of start? How did you get to know Lawrence? How did you get to know, you said somebody else, I don't know that you said their name, but the other person that you kind of got to know, like, how did it go from, oh, I know of them, I know that they do this writing, to, hey, I'm friendly with them.
Yeah, like you said, I just used to be a person that exists, and I had a Twitter, but I wasn't, like, talking to everybody like that. I was watching wrestling. I was on forums talking about wrestling. It was just I wasn't doing podcasts or writing reviews. I got to know Trask, who was, like, the other person I knew, in February when he just kind of randomly asked me to join staff one day. And I think it was because I was on the Wrestling With Words forum, and we got acquainted more there, that he asked me to join the site, like, around that time. So that was my start there. As far as, like, listening to podcasts goes, and I'll admit I wasn't, like, a huge podcast guy before I started, but once I got, you know, ingrained into learning all these wrestling personalities, obviously Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave Wrestling Culture was one that I really enjoyed listening to for, like, weekly recaps of the news and wrestling. I would listen to the VOW flagship podcast. I would listen to some wrestler hosted podcasts, like I think a lot of people start off with. Like, I used to listen to the Chris Jericho show or the Steve Austin show. You know, you kind of get into the podcast, you know, scene by listening to those people, and then you find other ones. But that's kind of how I got my start there.
Okay. And then, you know, Trask sees you on the message board, and he's like, this is the guy. We got to get him on here. And then I guess you mentioned becoming friendly with Lawrence. I mean, how did you become friendly with Lawrence? Was it also from the message board, or?
I knew Lawrence already followed me on Twitter, so I knew Lawrence from Twitter, and I used to praise Phoenix Plex stuff from time to time. So I was friendlier with him. Not like I, you know, exchanged DMs with him or anything, but I recognized the work that was going on over there, and I made sure to point it out whenever I felt like something was good.
Okay. Phoenix Plex, I mean, Wrestling With Words obviously has picked up the mantle in a lot of ways. I won't say that it's, you know, just derivative of Phoenix Plex or anything, but definitely picked up the mantle in a lot of ways from Phoenix Plex. But even Phoenix Plex Review kind of started out of nowhere and then was instantly kind of respected for having a lot of talent writing about stuff. I mean, you know, we talked about Skill Crane earlier, who was on there. We talked about Lawrence, Trask.
Bill Thompson.
It obviously sucks. But they did have the writer who passed away, who I unfortunately never even got to know. But, like, as soon as Wrestling With Words starts, it's another one where it kind of instantly has credibility and is a big deal. And, you know, I mean, obviously me and you are both involved, and we're kind of understand the culture of the website behind the scenes. Like, as someone who is very much involved with Wrestling With Words now, what do you think it is about the staff and the way that the website works that makes it that way? We're, like, pretty much instantly just is, like, respected and seen as on that level of, you know, these websites who've been around forever and all this and that. Like, do you see a reason why it is that way, or do you think it's just, like, anomalous and just kind of happens?
Well, I think because we do have such a big group of people who all care about wrestling, that you're getting opinions from so many different kinds of people from so many different walks of life. And then the thing that Wrestling With Words has done that a lot of people didn't is we started picking up stuff that a lot of people weren't covering, as far as, like, indies in Japan. Well, shout out to Isaac McEnroth, host of Piro and the Ruth, and who just released a book recently. You know, him becoming the go-to guy for Japanese independent wrestling coverage. We had a lot of coverage on the UK indies, US indies. We cover Lucha. We cover, you know, pretty much everything. And then we have great editorials and focus pieces on wrestlers like Harrison or Tiger Millionaire 4 does great editorials on guys like Sugar Dunkerton and Walt and Big Daddy Walter. And he has one coming on Marty Scurll. He did one on Kim Ray. You know, he's a guy that has focused a lot on the editorial side and spotlighting certain wrestlers. And I think because we're not so focused on one certain thing, that we have our hands in multiple pots, that people see how much we're trying to offer to this, I guess, wrestling bubble, where some sites have their focus, their bread and butter, and they stay there, where we kind of like to branch out and try different things.
Yeah, and I mean, Wrestling with Words has something for everybody. As you talked about it, I just thought about it. It's, God, that piece about Kim Ray was amazing, and I don't know that there's any other website anywhere that can come close to having something like that. You know, and it does have to do with, there's a huge staff on Wrestling with Words, and people may try to mock the amount of people that work for Wrestling with Words, but it is the multi-headed beast. I mean, the website covers everything, as you talked about, like from, you know, the smallest to the small to the biggest of the big companies all throughout the world. And getting into the minute details, there's a insane piece about homicide from
Can we talk about Brock and like how Brock is like the best writer ever? Come on, he's like the best
this guy. I mean, I love Brock
so much.
He brings the emotion that you know he has, you know, behind the funny guy clown character that he can kind of play around the friends. But you know that there's so much more bubbling underneath. And he brings that out in his writing a lot of times in a way that can be funny while being morose. And it's just, it's kind of fantastic. And again, as I was talking about that, I mean, the thing is of, you know, of just a mammoth piece about homicide from beginning to end of his career, just a big career retrospective that's definitely a recommended read over on Wrestling with Words. Before we take our last break, I would love to get Adrian in on this. Adrian.
Yes.
So Quentin is a big music guy, and he's a big just person who exists that you've been listening to talk for about an hour at this point. what questions did I not hit? Because I can be kind of bad about that when, you know, he's someone who I consider a friend and I know really well. I might be missing some parts of Quentin that someone who's just listening who doesn't know Quentin would love to know right now. What are they, Adrian?
You mentioned your dad was a rapper and stuff, and I would imagine Baltimore's got a pretty big music scene. So was being in Baltimore what kind of inspired him to be a rapper, or was that just in him from the beginning, just naturally?
I should have clarified then. My dad is from New York.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, so my dad is from Brooklyn, New York. So when I was mentioning that he, you know, knew all these people, I'm not sure if anyone caught on, but I was like naming a whole bunch of New York-based artists. And at that time, New York was obviously the hotbed of hip-hop. So he had a lot of connections there because pretty much hip-hop was based there at that point. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, he grew up on hip-hop, essentially grew up when hip-hop was becoming a thing. So it was just a natural thing where that was part of his environment. And that was something that, you know, became a part of the culture in the, you know, inner cities of New York. So it was just a natural thing to pick up.
That's interesting. Was it during the era when, because I read that, like, when that famous New York blackout happened and a lot of people, like, were able to acquire, like, DJ equipment and boomboxes and stuff, and that's how, like, there was that sort of boom of that music scene. Was that sort of when he was growing up, or was it, like, after that at some point? Do you know?
Yeah, probably a little bit after, you know, after that, you know, initial boom happened, because he was born in, like, 1975.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. Yeah, so he was a little bit after that initial boom. He would have been a child, but he heard the stories, and he grew up with a lot of people that were there from the inception of hip-hop, like my aunt, who was, like, 10 years older than him. She would have been there from the beginning, so she was able to tell him a lot of that stuff, and it just became something that he's almost like, on top of being an artist, he was a historian of the culture, too.
Okay, that's really interesting. That's a really interesting part of history in and of itself, so it's cool that he kind of has a connection to that, you know? So
yeah.
That's what I was
curious. Do you think about that you picked up that side of your kind of obsession with wrestling from your dad, as you just talked about him being like a historian and knowing the history of hip-hop as he was also like involved in it? Do you think that you kind of picked up on that when it comes to wrestling, or do you think that's something you picked up seeing that from him as something that you looked up to, or do you think that was something that you picked up from him genetically? Like, where do you think that comes down?
I mean, I guess it would be something that I recognize when talking to him, where he has so much knowledge of that particular topic that we would have like 3-hour, 4-hour conversations just talking about how hip hop has evolved from, you know, 1970s to now. We have a conversation about hip hop like every other week. And I guess my desire to be knowledgeable in what I do kind of transferred over. Like, I'm still someone that I'm not not a historian with music, but I think I know a lot. I'm not a historian with comedy, but I think I know a lot there. Like, you know, it's just something where if I'm really into it, I want to know as much as I can. So I would say I got that from him.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you, Adrian. Continue.
No, that was the biggest question I had. I think the other thing that we talked about before the show was just about how, because he's in Baltimore, and that's like where one of my favorite shows takes place, The Wire, obviously. But I don't want to nerd out too, because I can easily nerd out on that. But have you seen the show? Have you seen The Wire? And if you have, what do you think about it?
Yeah, of course I've seen The Wire, and yeah, there might be some bias there, but you know, I think it's one of the best TV shows of all time, if not the single best TV show of all time, in terms of real just representing a city so well. Like, even though it's, you know, a dramatic reenactment,
yeah,
you know, it captures what Baltimore is so well that, you know, for ever since The Wire has come out, people have this image of what Baltimore looks like. And if I'm being honest, The Wire is what Baltimore, you know, really is in reality.
Yeah, I mean, even just watching the show, and of course you see the nitty and gritty of it, Baltimore, just based on The Wire, looks like a beautiful city, you know, a beautiful port town and stuff. So that's what I like about it, too, is that I think that it plays such a huge character, like, in the show. And I also like that a lot of the themes from each season, like, it doesn't just represent Baltimore as a city, but it seems like it represents, like, a lot of the stuff that's wrong with Western society in general, you know, like, with when it comes to politics and policing, yeah, and all that good stuff. So that's really cool that I'd love to visit Baltimore someday. But like, do you get that a lot? Like, when people find out you're from Baltimore, do you get asked that a lot? Like, oh, like, is it like The Wire? Like, does that happen a lot? Like, I bet it's kind of annoying sometimes, right? I mean,
yeah, it does happen pretty often, because that's, for a lot of people, their only image of Baltimore is The Wire, yeah, because The Wire is the only time that Baltimore has been portrayed on a worldwide scale like that.
Yeah,
because Baltimore, you know, it's not a small city, but it's not New York, it's not LA, it's not Dallas, it's not Chicago, it's not Miami. It's not a city that gets portrayed a lot on television. So even though, you know, people should probably visit Baltimore to get their own opinion of it, that, you know, when these other cities are on TV, like I said, in New York or Miami, there's multiple perspectives that are shown. In Miami, you've seen the drug culture, but you've also seen the fun-loving party stuff. You've seen the ghettos that are ravaged by gangs and stuff. So in Miami, you've always seen multiple perspectives. In Baltimore, there's only been one. So when people ask that question, I think there's like a genuine curiosity there, even though it does get kind of annoying sometimes.
No, I am genuinely curious, because I geek out over that stuff. I mean, Tim knows it. I mean, if it's in a movie or a show and I really like it, I'm gonna geek out over it. You know,
that's true. You did make me drive you to Patty's Pub that one time.
I did, because LA is full of filming locations. So, you know,
yeah.
I want to do the Breaking Bad tour next time I go to Albuquerque. If I ever go to Albuquerque again, like, I want to do, like, the whole Breaking Bad tour where you go to each location and stuff. But if I ever, like, go to Baltimore, like, of course I'm going to want to, like, go to some of the, you know, famous spots that you see in the show and stuff, because I think that would just be really amazing, I think, to do that.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite season from the show The Wire, and do you have a favorite character?
I don't have a favorite season, but I do have a favorite character. Yeah, you know,
who's that?
It's you know, kind of cliche since everyone says him, but I love Omar. So
Omar's great. Yeah, Omar's,
yeah.
It's so funny. I mean, I won't say how his story ends, but it's funny how, like, he's built up as this, like, almost like a mythical type of character, and then just the way he ends, it's almost like kind of anticlimactic, but it's also so realistic at the same time, because, like, that's just how real life is a lot of the times, I guess. Like, you know, people who are built up to be great just don't always have, like, a great ending, you know?
Yeah, you know, like, Tim, you know, like Tim's heard me, like, you know, mark out over, like, psychology and little things in wrestling, and story of Omar Little is, you know, one of the things I love where, like you said, he's like a mythical being. Like, the dude walks down the street whistling and will kill somebody in cold blood. He's like, you know, almost like, you know, Robin Hood of the city. And despite this aura he has of being untouchable, the way he dies is like, you know, that's how you kill him off. But it makes sense because you know, it's like, you know, anything can happen in The Wire, and that's why it's so great.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think I'm on my third rewatch of it now, and I think I'm in the third season, which I think is like probably one of the best television seasons ever made. His character, I mean, I don't know, he fits, he ties everything together so well. I mean, because he's like an outsider. He's not a part of the drug gangs, and he's not a part of the cops or anything or any establishment. He's like his own thing. He's a rogue character, and I think, Tim, that's why I think you would like the show, because you are like a rogue person in general yourself. Like, you've never like been part of any like one group or the other, so I think that's what I think you would enjoy the show, just because of that aspect of it, you know?
Yeah. I can see why you would think I would enjoy it, but the reason why I wouldn't is because of the same reason that I'm too busy to fucking watch the show. I'm just like, I got so many other things going on, and I don't necessarily want to see the depiction of the shitty life that I lead, or led, I guess, at this point. So you talked about Baltimore there when it pertains to The Wire, but you also talked about wanting to leave. I mean, Quentin, do you consider Baltimore your city? Yeah, go ahead.
No, I you go ahead. I was going to get into that next, but you go ahead.
Well, I mean, okay, so this is from both of us. This is from Adrian and Timothy with love to Quentin. Do you consider Baltimore your city? And when you leave, will it always be your city?
I mean, technically, yeah, this is where I've spent most of my life. Like, I was born in New York, but Baltimore is where I was raised. Baltimore is the most familiar place to me as far as I know the neighborhoods, the different ways to get home and all that stuff. So I, you know, from that perspective, yeah, I have a lot of, you know, attachment to Baltimore, but I don't have like pride in my city that a lot of people do. You know, if you talk to someone in Baltimore, that they're usually really proud to be from Baltimore. And I've just never had that. So even though that when I leave, yeah, I'll probably miss it because it's just like the only thing that I've ever really had to call home. I'm just, you know, on a pride level, it's not something that I'm really proud to say that. Well, when someone asks me, oh, where are you from? I typically say Maryland. Mm. Not because I'm ashamed of saying I'm from Baltimore, but, you know, it's not the biggest part in who I am. You know, I'm just a kid from Maryland. Baltimore isn't really a big key in who I am.
I totally get that. When people ask me where I'm from, I always start with California. And if they want to get specific, I'll say Southern California. If they want to get more specific, I'll say Palm Springs. And if they want to get more specific, I'll say, well, I'm from a little town near Palm Springs called Thousand Palms, but you've obviously never heard of it.
And then even then, you say town, which is not technically correct.
Okay, we won't get into that discussion.
We're going to get into that right now. But no, Adrian said that. I mean, me and Adrian are both from the same area in the Coachella Valley, essentially. But Adrian has kind of, as we've both grown up, has moved around a little bit more to different states and different cities, and I don't necessarily know if he has the same feeling right now that I do, but in general, like, we left the place that we grew up with until we were, you know, the same age as you are right now, and then we got out of there. But like, I'm very proud now to call myself a Los Angelino, and I love my city and I love Los Angeles. And I just wonder, as you talked about that, like, you know, it's going to be the place that you always know where everything is. I mean, knowing where everything is doesn't necessarily mean that you love it. Like, can you easily see yourself transitioning that way? Will you, you know, you're born there. Will you consider yourself a proud New Yorker, or I don't know what they call Chicagoans, or if you go to Austinite, like where would you consider yourself the same way? Do you think that wherever you do kind of rest your head, especially now being someone who's not proud of being from Baltimore necessarily, do you think it'll be easier for you to move to another city and instantly embrace it? Or do you think maybe some of in some ways you'll harbor that kind of, yeah, this place is a lot nicer, but you know, the people here are weak, or you know, these kids are spoiled and they don't know what it would be like to grow up in Baltimore. Like, realistically, do you think that you'll be able to drop it and really easily just go like, this is where I'm from now?
I mean, no, I'm always going to be from Baltimore. That's never going to change. That's just that's just being honest. Even if I don't, you know, go out of my way to say it, that's just a fact of life here, that I am from Baltimore. I've spent 17 years of my life living here. That's not going to change. You know, so if I move somewhere, yeah, I'm going to miss Baltimore because that's where most of my friends live. That's where most of my family lives. From that perspective, I'm going to miss it. But it doesn't change the fact that I'm not going to be proud to live there. And, you know, the key thing here is for me always being happy. And living in Baltimore doesn't make me happy. What makes me happy is something I'll have to find out later. And if that means moving to Austin, Texas, or moving to, you know, fucking bubblefuck Wyoming, I don't know. But, you know, whatever makes me happy at the end of the day is, you know, what I'm looking for. And I'm not that I'm like looking to be proud of where I live. It's just something I want to be happy where I am, too.
Yeah, no. I mean, I totally get that. Adrian, you got anything else?
No, I totally agree. I mean, I haven't, like Tim said, I've moved around. I've lived in Phoenix. I lived in Salt Lake. I live here in Denver now. And I miss California. I'm always going to consider California my home. You know, like you said, like I'm always going to be from California. I'm always going to tell people that because California is great. The desert's not great. I don't like the desert, but I like California in general. So, so I totally get what
and for mean. People that didn't grow up in the Coachella Valley, when he talks about the desert, he means Coachella Valley.
Coachella Valley, sorry, because I know yeah. The desert can be like the high desert. But yeah, no, I totally agree with him on that. I mean, I feel the same way. You know, I mean, Tim, how excited were you to finally move out of Palm Springs again after being there for a while when you came back from L.A. originally? Because I know you lived in L.A. for a little bit before you came back, right? So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as Quentin talked about it, and he said I spent 17 years in Baltimore, I thought about my life, and I thought, you know, for me it might even be different than for other people because I was born in the Inland Empire, and I didn't move to the Valley until I was like 5 or 6, and then from there I lived in the Coachella Valley for, you know, until I was like 17 or 18. So realistically, I lived in the Coachella Valley for like 10 years, you know, and then spent time in LA for a couple of years. And then I was back for a couple of years and then I'm back out in LA. But like 10 years becomes a drop in the bucket really quickly. I mean, I just turned 30 last year and 10 years is now a third of my life. And
that's crazy.
Next year, it's even less. And 17 years is a long time for Quentin now at, you know, 19. But 17 years when you're 40 or when you're 50, and let's say you lived in, you know, the same city from when you're 20, it's like 17 years doesn't feel like a big deal anymore. And that's kind of where we're all at. And everyone should really stop and think about it. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all relative. Like, if you're in a miserable relationship and you've been with someone for, you know, 7 or 8 years and you feel like I have to stay with them because I've invested so much time with them. Well, the 7 or 8 years in a terrible relationship will feel like nothing when you've, you know, been with the person you're supposed to be with for 15 years or 16 years or
Isn't
when you live in the city.
Cost fallacy.
Exactly. And it really is a thing. It's like once you're in a different situation and once you're older and you have, you know, that purview or that long view to look at it and say, yeah, that sucked. But at the time when you're in it, you think like, yeah, that's great. Which is what a lot of people are thinking about while they're listening to this podcast. It's been going for over an hour. They're thinking, yeah, this is going for a long time. So Adrian, before we go to the last break, I'm just going to give you one last shot to hit anything in, because when we come back from that last break, you know what we're doing.
Oh, I know. What
we're doing one final thing. Yeah. Weird. So Adrian, anything else you got to get?
Really, I just want to say, and Quentin, being 19 and being single and stuff, this is like the best time of your life to move around and explore different areas where you would want to live and settle down, because trust me, the older you get and once you get into relationship and stuff, it's going to get a little bit harder. And I don't want to sound like an old timer, like I know everything, but just based on my own personal experience, and I think Tim can agree with this to a certain extent, it's harder to do as you're older. So it's like, it's great that you're at this age, because it's going to be a lot easier for you to be able to do that than, you know, once you're more settled down with someone and stuff as you get older.
I think I'm gonna probably gonna wind up taking a trip to North Carolina soon to go shoot a music video
nice.
With my best friend. So I have plans to go do stuff. I've told Tim that I want to go study abroad at some point when I transfer to university.
That's
I either
cool.
want to go to yeah, want to either like go to England or like Germany or Japan or something. So nice. I have intent to travel places and explore.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
Yeah, my sister did that, studied abroad in Spain. She loved it. People always say they love it, so I'm pretty sure you'd love it too. But that's all I have, Tim. I think we're ready to go to break if you're ready.
Well, if I'm gonna paraphrase Alan Arkin in the the hit film Little Miss Sunshine, when you do decide to go overseas, don't just study one broad, Quentin. You gotta fuck a lot of women. We'll be right back after the break.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Okay, we're back, everybody. Tim, I think you know what time it is, and I think Quentin almost knows what time it is, right?
Oh, yeah, I think I have an idea what's going on here.
I think it's time for the final question.
It is time to ask that final question, Quentin. The question that everyone has been sitting with bated breath waiting for the answer to this question. It's what everyone turns in for, and it's also what everyone turns into, because when you've been on the show long enough, you turn into having to answer the question, which is, Quentin, if someone only knows you from Suppress Lucha, from Tap or Snap, from Psychology is Dead, from your myriad of reviews on Wrestling with Words, and they don't know Quentin, the person, the guy in the Slack chats, the guy in the DMs on Twitter, what would be something about Quentin Moody that they would find shocking?
Okay, barring the music, since we've already talked about that, so I can't go there. One thing is that being like the little sports kid that I was, I got hit by a car when I was 10, like in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And it turned out to be the mother of one of my basketball teammates.
Jesus!
And I got hit by the car, was fine. I popped up. They took me to the hospital a little bit after that. And then I still played that basketball game later on that day. And I had to play the game with the kid whose mother hit me with a car.
Wow. How fast was she going?
It wasn't that fast, because if she was going faster, I would have been, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's
but,
true.
She was going fast enough, we would be having this conversation slower. And if she was going slower, we wouldn't be having this conversation at all.
Wow.
But I guess, I don't know, wow. So it was one of your teammates' mom hit you with a car. Was it near the place that you guys were going to play basketball? Is that why she happened? Like, does that kind of take away from the serendipity of the event?
Yeah, because it was coming out of, it was when I was 10, so me and my father were just leaving the rec center for signing up for the football season for that year. Because you have to go in there and like sign the papers and stuff. So we were just leaving the Parkville Rec Center. We were crossing the street, and this lady from my right side was waving, saying it was okay for us to cross. I didn't check my left, and then the next thing I know, I'm on the ground. So that's how that went.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I feel, in some ways, I feel bad for you. In other ways, I actually feel bad for your dad. Because if he had to put any kind of money down for the football season to, like, say that you were going to play the next season of football, like, or pay for physical or anything like that, like registration fees, if I was in his situation, I would feel shitty that my son got hit by a car, but I would also be like, fuck, that was $25 that I just had to pay for the registration for this football season that's now not happening because he got hit by a car. And then I would stop myself and be like, wow, you're a shitty dad. Like, you shouldn't care about $25. Your son just got hit by a car. And then I would just, like, be conflicted and feel really bad about myself. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, Quentin, that was bad for you, but you shouldn't have been such a bad son to your father.
I remember we got in the car and like it was like quiet. I was like shaking because I was like, what the fuck just happened? And then my dad's like, you could have just died right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Like I didn't cry immediately. I cried when I was like at the hospital when the nurse was checking on me. I didn't, you know, I was still in shock.
Right.
And then like once it hit in when I was like at the hospital and they were like checking on me, I'm like, yeah, that's like when the tears started. But and initially when he was like, you know, my son could have just died in front of me, I'm like, yeah, maybe.
If you say so.
I mean, possibly that could have happened. And then, you know, I played, you know, a basketball game the same day after that. I was fine. So like, right. Yeah, so that was
how
a
many,
fun
how many
day.
Points you put up that in that basketball game?
I'm pretty sure I was concussed, so I'm not sure. They kept stopping the game because I had a Band-Aid on my hand, but I kept bleeding, and they kept stopping the game. And it like was getting to like the final minutes in the fourth quarter, and it was like really close. And like with 2 minutes left, they called an injury timeout, and I was, you know, not saying I'm like the star player, but I was like pretty important to the, you know, starting five of the team. And they pulled me out for like an injury timeout, and I think we wound up losing that game.
Okay, Jesus. I was gonna say when you started that, I was like thinking you were gonna say they kept, you know, calling timeout in the middle of the game because I was leaking spinal fluid through my nose as I had been hit by a car earlier in the day. Jesus. All right. Well, I think that's it for us tonight, Quentin. Phenomenal guest. The show just blew by, honestly.
It did.
What things do people need to go check out from Quentin Moody?
You know, you alluded to it when you were introducing me, but me and you just did a 3-part, in total, 8.5-hour special of Psychology is Dead, talking about the top 50 wrestlers of 2016. So people should go listen to that if they have nothing else to do with their lives.
Do you understand that show was so long that it stopped us from putting out a podcast that week? We didn't do a podcast like 2 weeks ago, and like we missed it, and it was New Year's Eve or whatever, but it was really because of how long that show was. Like, it's no joke.
So you're blaming me.
Kind of. It was my own fault too, but, you know, both of us were the reason why I could not do more podcasts that week. It was just too much. But yeah, that is something go check out. But what else do they need to check out, Quentin?
Starting next week, myself, Trask, and Brock are gonna start recording for the top 100 matches of 2016. So if you thought 8.5 hours was long, I don't know how I'm gonna make it through 100 matches. And knowing how I, you know, knowing how I am when I talk to Brock, that may legitimately go like, you know, 20 hours or something. So,
yeah,
that won't be fun.
What drugs do you guys have to do to get through so many hours of talking about wrestling just to stay awake? Like, that's crazy.
Wrestling is the drugs, bro. Wrestling is the drugs.
See, like, the joke is that I always say that me, Tim, and Brock can never be on the same show because it would never end. And I know this for a fact.
I believe you guys just not ever stop talking.
And the podcast that we're supposed to do together is just like officially never starting. Like, there is a project that is supposed to involve me, Quentin, and Brock full time. And like, I think that we're all kind of scared to ever start it because it will go forever.
Break world records and shit, man.
Yeah.
That like wouldn't be fun. I'd probably hate Brock and Tim by the end of it because it's just like, why the fuck am I still talking to you?
Well, hating exactly. Tim is par for the course, so I think you're fine.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know anyone that says good words about Tim.
That's true.
I guess I should get back to plugs. So Praise to S. Lucha. I host a podcast that talks about Lucha Libre. That's on the Wrestling With Words audio network, and I host that with Brandon, and I'll be returning to a bi-weekly schedule. The last episode of Tap or Snap, maybe ever, or at least for the foreseeable future, just came out 2 days ago. So if you want to hear talk about Nobuhiko Takada's ass, then you should listen to that.
And that does have past guest on the show, Skill Crane / Josh.
Yes.
He is the main host of that show.
You know, I like doing that show because the other ones I have to do, I have to host, and hosting sucks. So I get to play a guest while he he gets to carry the workload there.
That's for sure. I much prefer getting to be the co-host / guest of shows. It's so much easier. I think that's about it, right, Quentin? Am I wrong? Or you didn't even hit psychology as dead? Or no, that was the first thing.
Yeah, kind I did psychology as dead. I mean, yeah. There's going to be an episode coming out this month with
Trask. There's more episodes.
Yeah, that's going to be The Art of Delayed Selling.
Oh, okay. That'll come out eventually.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the weirder ones to discuss. So, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Luckily, you know, what's smart about The Art of Delayed Selling is it's going to come out about a week after it should have. Adrian.
Yes, sir.
I know you have something important to plug.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to wait until I'm done. This Week in Wrestling is my show that I do with Pete from Titans of Wrestling. I think it's kind of undersold just how great of a wrestling mind Pete really is. And I think people don't realize it. Like, Titans of Wrestling has been going for a long time, and the shit that they cover is dry as fuck. And, like, he is the primary minutia breakdown guy when it comes to some of the driest wrestling that you'll ever watch. And his ability to really kind of pick out the details in some of the most boring wrestling is really impressive. And then the fact that he can turn around and then use that same skill to talk about like wrestling that's actually exciting and interesting with me every week on this Week in Wrestling.
Ring of Honor is exciting?
Well, it's more exciting than 1978 WWF.
Bob Backlund's going to have a word with you.
I would rather watch Bob Backlund than Will Ferrara. But, you know, that's not saying much now, is it? I'd rather watch Bob Backlund than most of the people on the ROH roster, except for Kyle O'Reilly. And I know that will probably send people up a tree. But, yeah, like the fact that he can bring that same in-depth breakdown of wrestling to modern product is really fucking impressive. We do it every week. We do, you know, Ring of Honor, as Quentin said, CWF Mid-Atlantic, which is also fun, and then usually like just a random – well, we also do NXT now, and then we'll also do like a random super show. But the big one is this next week we're going to be doing what's that big show that they do in Japan? Wrestle Kingdom. We're going to be doing Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, 4 hours of some of the most amazing wrestling that you're going to see all year. It happens on the fourth day of the year, which is always impressive. So go check that out for sure. Otherwise, I'm going to tweet everything else out that I do at Lucha Undead. But Adrian, let's hit your big plugs for tonight because you did something this past week that was really – you really did it this week, Adrian.
Thank you, Tim. Yes, follow me on Twitter, @DelaBoots. Follow my reinvigorated, restarted, renewed, fresh show at StoryGerm. By the time this comes out, the episode that Tim is referring to will have come out last week, which is the look back at our old original podcast, the Poor Decisions podcast, which I told Tim I've been wanting to do for a while, and I finally did it. And I'm really proud of it, and I think I've listened to it twice today, and I laughed both times, honestly. That's how funny it is. That's how funny Tim is in that episode.
Was.
So do that and follow us on Twitter at Lucha Undead, and that's pretty much it, Tim.
Fantastic. You know what I'm going to say, Adrian? You did a great job on that episode of Story Germ, and you know why?
What's that?
I'm going to tell you did a great job. You did such a good job because you made Poor Decisions sound like a good podcast.
Thank you.
So good job with your editing. You made me sound funny. You made the show seem good. So I give you a lot of credit for that.
I appreciate that, Tim. It always otherwise, a lot coming from you.
Otherwise, I guess we're done here, guys. We went a little bit longer than we should have. We definitely kept Quentin out past his bedtime, but that's okay because he is a grown man at this point, so he doesn't have to listen to your goddamn curfews, Mom. You don't tell me what to do. But more importantly than curfews, mothers, getting hit by cars, or recap specials of podcasts where you talk about things that were slightly racially insensitive, the most important things in life are the three B's. And those three B's are good beers, which I'm drinking, good buds, which I've been talking to, and good banter, which we've been making together. Good night, and good New Year, everybody.